What about life in the lines and behind the lines? What was it like? I mean, people living in trenches and so on.
We went into the trenches in 1915. And, of course, it was coming autumn. And so, therefore, we slept in bivouacs when we used to come down out of the trenches. But when it got to really about Christmas, 1915, 1916 were about winter. A lot of soldiers died from flu, except they did at home, I got to know, right? And then in the winter, where we stayed at Merley Mally, we went up to the next village, which was just behind the line. Well, that was in machine gun fire. But there was no houses standing except in one, right again the level crossing. And I think the Germans left that for a purpose, because there was a level crossing there and the railway line went round and it went just behind their trenches and that, where the River Anka was. We could see the River Anka out of our trenches and the little wooden bridge that goes over it and that. And this was it was called Ocean Villas. So there was no population there at all. So we had to go down into the cellars to sleep. And many a time we preferred to be outside than in, because we were lousy and there was rats that tormented you at nights, because they'd just come down the cellar steps like anything, and the cellar grates and that. It was nothing for them to run over your face and nip your hands and that. And I'll always remember this, that we'd never seen such things as a pair of Wellingtons in those days. And we was issued with them. And I took a section up with these Wellingtons on. And by the time we got into the trenches, some had one and some had none and nothing, got stuck in the mud and all that. So and luckily, we had sense to take his boots with us, and we put his boots round his necks. And so we had his boots to come out with.
Because up to then, you'd been wearing putties, had you?
Oh, yes, we always had his putties on. And if you did lose your boots off and that when you was going in, which was quite regular, you know. And then we used to get about half a dozen sandbags and take the strings off of them, and then slot them all into one, and then put them up your leg, and then lop your putties on and come out with those. And when you got onto the hard road, you're just like a duck flapping, plop, plop, plop. and then you take your boots off of your shoulder and put them on again. Because if your laces broke, you know, you could lose your boots. Oh, yeah. Oh, so, you know, you used to have a little bit of laugh and all that about it, but it wasn't nice. And when you were going in at dark, we also went going at dark when it was dark. The ice would be breaking where you were and that, and the rats would be messing about, and sometimes you'd get a foot on a rat, especially if it was dry in some places, like, you'd probably put your foot on one, and you'd squeak out. Oh, yes, we got all that. And then when it was wet, there'd be duck boards, and you'd stand on one end, you'd catch one end of the duck board, and the other end would fly up and catch the one or two or three at front of you, and he'd go down into the mud and water. Oh, it was poor life. And I'll tell you another funny story there. When we went up at the first, there was a well, the village well, and we were getting our drinking water out there, but we always boiled it, mind you. But all tea was made on it and all that, you know, and all the cooking was done with it, all this cooking. And I think we'd been there about 2 months when somebody went to get some water in a biscuit can so he could, he was going to wash his clothes, some of his clothes. And he brought part of a body up, and that did it. But they still kept going for it. I stayed on the Somme for 12 months, and then I got wounded on the 17th of September. That was just after. And I come back to England, and I was in England 3 months. 13 weeks, yes, 3 months. And I went back out again, but I didn't get to my old company. When I got back to base depot, what they call base depot, I went all on. I was transferred to another company, 184. So I went in another direction, and I went up to Passchendaele, and that's where I got gassed at Passchendaele. It blinded me, and I also lost my speech. Because I remember when I got down to Rouen, there were others like me, you see, and we used to go out for a walk out of the ground. We used to tap Morse code on his hands. See, because you couldn't talk. And one of them, you'd tap it to the middleman, and then the middleman would tap it to the other one, if there was three of you. And that's how you used to get about.
What was the sensation like of being gassed?
It was a funny sensation because we were chasing the Germans up at the time and at Passchendaele, and it was level country there, and you could see a long way forward, and actually, there were no trenches where we were chasing. We were chasing them over the fields then. And they were leaving bogey traps here and there and all over, and of course we had to dismantle them. They were very crafty with the Germans, you know. When they used to evacuate a place or anything, they used to leave a lot of booby traps. Well, there, what we, our military bomb is just like a cricket ball, and you just build a pin out. Well, theirs was like a potato masher, you know, what a torch is like. You know, you mash potatoes like
yeah.
Round end of it. And then through the handle was a piece of string, and at the bottom, then there was a button. And when you pull that button, you had 5 seconds to get rid of it, like we'd 5 seconds to get rid of a military bomb. So what they used to do, they'd leave a pile here and there, and they'd take the button off, extend the string, and then put the button back on again, and then they'd press that into the earth. And then when you went, some of these wasn't used to it and didn't know it, probably a number of seconds, get rid of all that ammunition from there. Get rid of all that ammunition from there. Well, then get all of them and hand them to one another. And that's a bit stiff, and it would pull, and so on, and poof. So his hands would be blown off, probably. Oh, they used to use a lot of tricks. Same when you were getting to a town, they used to put them in the shutters. And when you open the shutter to look in through the French window, like sort of thing. And then when you got inside, there was probably some furniture. When you lifted the piano and up, there'd be one in there. So you lift it up, because you couldn't always see them. And you had to lift the lid up if you were in the piano before you saw it. So you didn't take any chances. So you used to use all sorts of dodges. Tie a bit of string on it and get outside and sort of lift it up. And same with the windows. We used to... where the window catches, well, we'd put some string round, and then we'd go about 5 or 6 yards up the street and pull the window open. If it didn't go off, well, we know we could go through the window if we couldn't go through the door. As a matter of fact, I tell you, when I was blinded, the other men that was with me, I don't know if he was wounded or anything, but to me, everybody had vanished. So you couldn't see anybody, and you couldn't hear anybody. All I could hear some officers shouting to the men at a gun, a field gun or something, and that. And I knew it'd come off the road, so I started creeping towards the road. Well, some of the Germans had given themselves up, and they were coming on this road, and they picked me up, a couple of Germans, and they took me to the dressing station. And then when I got nearly there, we kept meeting them, same position as I was. And then you were all lined up back of one of the, your hands on each shoulder, walking behind one another. And that's how you got to the Marquee dressing station. Oh, it, terrible sight. But you used to take it as it came somehow, I don't know why. You were so saturated in it. But you're pleased when you come home, like.